In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness has not understood it. There came a man who was sent from God. His name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all men might believe. He himself was not the light. He came only as a witness to the light. The true light that gives light to the world, every man coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who received him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision or a husband's will, but born of God. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. John testifies concerning him. He cries out, saying, "This was he of whom I said, 'He who comes after me has surpassed me, because he was before me.' From the fullness of his grace we have all received one blessing after another. For the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, but God, the one and only, who is at the Father's side, has made him known."
Now, I have a confession to make, and that is that I don't always listen to announcements. So forgive me if this has already been said, but just as a reminder to you all, we do have a fellowship meal after the service this morning. You're all very welcome to stay. If you haven't come prepared to bring anything, that doesn't matter. There's always far more than we could possibly hope or ask or imagine. And so we can enjoy it. But you're all very welcome to stay. It normally gets served sometime just after 12 o'clock. There is tea and coffee as well, so even if you can't stay for lunch, do stop and have a chat after the service. Well, this is part of our series of answering life's big questions. And the particular question we're asking today you might not think is one of life's really big questions, but nonetheless, I thought it was worth having a look at. And the question is, isn't Christianity, well, rather old-fashioned? Now, I'm going to start off by saying what I'm not going to talk about this morning, which will be a great relief to some of you and probably an annoyance to the rest of you. But I'm not going to be talking about what we do in church and the way in which we do it and the style in which we do it, whether it's traditional or contemporary or whatever. That I'm not even going to bother with that this morning. So some of you can now let the stress levels go down and relax a little bit, and some of you can line up afterwards to say, "Why didn't you say it?" Anyway, there we go. What I really want to talk about is the idea that people often put around in the world around us, that Christianity is somehow past its sell-by date. You know, it was all right for people in years gone by when they were perhaps a little bit more ignorant and a little bit sort of, well, stuck in their ways. And they needed a crutch to cling on to. I shouldn't perhaps mention that word around here at the moment, should I? There's quite a few of them around. I was looking outside church last Sunday morning, and there were three people on crutches and one in a wheelchair. And I thought, people walking past, what goes on in that place? But you know, there is this idea around that somehow Christianity is no longer relevant to us. It's not intellectually sustainable in the 21st century. We, after all, live in a nice modern age where we have greater freedoms and choices than in the past, access to knowledge in such a way that couldn't have even been dreamt of. If I use a word this morning which you don't understand, if you had the slightest desire to understand what I was saying, half of you get out your phones and Google it, wouldn't you? Find out what it is. We have access to knowledge that we never would have had before. We have opportunities that were denied our forefathers. We have greater wealth, greater mobility, better care social care, health care, better education, better housing. And somehow, because people are so comfortable in these things, Christianity almost seems an irrelevance. It's something that belongs to the past, with poor housing and poor health care. Notwithstanding the fact that most of those things, or many of those things that I've just spoken of, were pioneered by Christians in previous generations. Or sometimes they'll look at the attitudes that Christians have and what the Bible teaches and say, well, it's no longer relevant. We've moved from those sort of dark ages into a greater period of enlightenment. And so the attitudes that Christians uphold and the Bible teaches, things like attitudes towards marriage and sex, questions of sexuality and gender issues, euthanasia, abortion, drug abuse and misuse. All those sorts of things, apparently, modern man thinks, well, these are wonderful things, and aren't Christians living in something of a dark age when there wasn't the same sort of tolerance that there is now? Well, basic principle that I want us to start with this morning is that God is unchanging. That reading we just had, it was one of several readings which we could have chosen this morning. But you remember how it started off? And I've done a wonderful thing of turning to the right page, but it's the wrong page. Oh, it's still the wrong page. Got bookmarks everywhere. Yeah, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. As the passage unfolds, we realize that what John is writing about there, who John is writing about there, is Jesus Christ. He is the Word who came to live amongst us, who took flesh. But right there we read that he was there at the beginning. Through him all things were made. That Jesus Christ didn't just appear for a short period of history, round about the bit where it changed from A.D. to... change from BC to AD, get that round the right way. Those handful of years, round about AD 0 to 30 or something like that. But he was there, existed before that, right back to the dawn of time. And the Bible, as we read it, shows us how God exists and is relevant to, and speaks to, and is concerned about every single age. The Bible speaks about the beginning of the world and goes right through to the book of Revelation and other parts of the New Testament, indeed, we looked a couple of weeks ago in the Old Testament, to the end of time and the dawn of a new heaven and a new earth. It takes us right the way through. And this God who created it all and oversees it all and is in the process of building his people, the church, in this world, but not just in this world. This God never changes. There's passages that talk about his unchanging enduring nature. Paul wrote, or the writer to the Hebrews wrote, rather, in Hebrews 13 and verse 8, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday and today and forever. Or you've got John writing again in the book of Revelation, where he's describing God, and he says he is and who was and who is to come. He is a God who stands outside the bounds of history, the bounds of time. He's beyond time, yet he is intricately involved in this world in which we live. He is in time as well. So every single age, every single part of this whole creation is not beyond his reach. And what he says applies to us all. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He is the beginning and the end, the Alpha, the Omega, which is the Greek alphabet. We would say he is the A to Z, the beginning and the last. And he remains the same. He's building his people. Do you know the Church of Jesus Christ? As you look around this nation today, and as people do surveys, they say, the church is shrinking. But you know, it's not. It's always growing. because the people who become part of his church never, ever leave it. We look around this nation and there's places with no Christian witness, no churches. There's other places where churches are thriving and growing. There's a great variety in our land and across the world. You can see the same sort of pattern. There may be ages where there are more Christians per head of population than there are at other times. But the Church of Jesus Christ is not just to be found in Wem Baptist Church at 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning. It is all the people that make up God's people from all ages, from the beginning of time right through to now and on into the future, and that is constantly growing. And one day we will all be together. The vast majority of them are no longer alive in this world, but they still exist. And one day we'll be together in that new heaven and that new earth. As God builds his people, God doesn't become past his sell-by date, nor does his message. You see, one of my concerns in doing this morning is not just to speak to anyone here who might be wondering, well, what's this God business all about? Is it really relevant? Isn't it old-fashioned? But to give us confidence as Christians to hold on to what we have and not want to redesign it to suit the desires of mythical modern man. And some of you will have realized that as I've described the changes that have gone on in our society, that what I'm speaking about is only part of the world anyway. You know, the description I've given could apply to middle-class Brits and maybe Americans and Europeans and Australians and so on. But there's many parts of the world where the things I mentioned just don't exist. Freedoms and freedom of choice, where access to knowledge is limited, where there are few opportunities, where wealth is just a pie in the sky. They don't have the freedom of movement, and even if they have the freedom to move, they haven't got the money to do it with. Their health care is appalling. Their education system is very definitely second rate. Their housing is squalor. And that's today. The idea that we live in a great enlightened age is a bit of a joke for some people. We come to a God who never changes, and his character and the things that describe him, they endure forever. We talked about his faithfulness. We sung about his faithfulness. We sung about his love. We've sung about his power and his greatness, his majesty, his rule over all things. And rather than that just seeming a bit old-fashioned, it's a glorious truth to hold on to, because here is somebody that we can trust. Christianity is not a fad. It's not just something that's fly by night. It's stood the test of time. It's stood the test of all time. Okay, we talk about Christianity, but it's before the coming of Christ as well. That God working out his purposes and preparing for Christ's coming. And he came into this world not to form a new religion, but to save mankind as they put their faith and their trust in him. There's a continuity between everything that's been revealed in the Old Testament, right through Jesus, through into the New Testament, and down to the present age and on into the future. It makes him trustworthy. It makes us, it gives us the ability to talk about certainties and to have confidence in the message that we have, because he never changes. When we look at society's modern stuff and the things which they say, well, we're living in enlightened times. We don't need this sort of stuff anymore. First of all, let me just say, it's not very modern. Some of those things I mentioned. I'm not doing well with my bookmarks today. Just bear with me a moment. There we go. Some of those things I mentioned, like sort of sexuality and so on. There's nothing new about this. I read this a few weeks ago in a Sunday evening service. I'll read it again now. This is Paul writing to a church in Rome. Now, he was writing it about 2,000 years ago. But I think you'll agree with me, it's as relevant and as up-to-date now as it was then. Romans chapter 1, verse 18. The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of people who suppress the truth by their wickedness. Since what may be known about God is plain to them because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse. For although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him. But their thinking became futile and their foolish hearts were darkened. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like a mortal human being and birds and animals and reptiles. Therefore, God gave them over in the sinful desires of their hearts to sexual impurity for the degrading of their bodies with one another. They exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshipped and served created things rather than the Creator who is forever praised. Because of this, God gave them over to shameful lusts. Even their women exchanged natural sexual relations for unnatural ones. In the same way, the men also abandoned natural relations with women and were inflamed with lust for one another. Men committed shameful acts with other men and received in themselves a due penalty for their error. Furthermore, just as they did not think it worthwhile to retain the knowledge of God, so God gave them over to a depraved mind, so that they do what ought not to be done. They have become filled with every kind of wickedness, greed, evil, and depravity. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, and malice. They are gossips, slanderers, God-haters, insolent, arrogant, and boastful. They invent ways of doing evil. They disobey their parents. They have no understanding, no fidelity, no love, no mercy. Although they know God's righteous decree that those who do such things deserve death, they not only continue to do these things, but also approve of those who practice them. It's a shocking passage, really, isn't it? Incredibly descriptive. And as we could see how that applies to our current age, and yet it was written 2,000 years ago. There is nothing modern about the ways of the world. Our technology has changed. Our abilities to travel have changed. Our access to knowledge has changed. But the more things change, the more they stay the same. Human nature has not changed one little drop. And as we read those things, perhaps some of you are thinking, well, I'm not quite like that. Not the extreme things that are said there, but, you know, it talks there about envy and deceit and malice, slanderers, gossips. There are so many things there that just describe even the really rather nice people that are around. Because the Bible tells us the truth. We're none of us perfect. We are all sinners. Paul writes later on in the same letter, he says, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Now that's you and me. You see, I think when people start looking at Christianity and they start saying, well, you know, isn't it a bit out of date? It's not really relevant to us anymore. Passages like that tell us that it is as relevant then, as relevant now as it was then. And it's the only answer to the real need. You see, I don't think people are really sort of saying when they talk about, oh, Christianity's old-fashioned. That's not really the problem. The problem for them is that they don't like what Christianity says. It's the message they dislike. And because the message contains this sort of idea that we should submit to God. And that word submit is a dirty word today. People don't like submitting to anybody. They don't like submitting to authorities. They think they know better. If they can get away with something, they will. They don't like even submitting, you know, wives to husbands or to their bosses. We were a bit late coming this morning for all sorts of reasons. One of them was that we followed two people cycling side by side on the road between Shrewsbury and Wem. And plenty of opportunity to pull over and pull into single file so that the cars behind could pass. But no, they just kept on going. At great risk to themselves, one has to say, and great frustration to those behind. But the idea that they're quite within their rights to do it, and it's quite legal, writing two abreast. But an act of kindness to let others pass. I cycle as well, and I get out of cars' ways if I'm holding them up. I pull over, let them pass, get a breather. In that order, I have to say. But I don't cling on to this sort of idea that I must stand on my rights. But so many people do. I don't like to submit. And the idea that you submit to God, who comes with his instructions and his design for life that is so different to what our friends might tell us, perhaps even what our sinful nature desires. You know, greed, lust, all that sort of stuff. God says no, but he gives us a better way. But he doesn't just come as someone who says, right, you mustn't do this and you mustn't do that, and I'm going to give you all of this in order to spoil your fun. That's not God's purpose at all. He created us. He designed us. And his design, all that thousands and thousands of years ago, is as perfect now as it was then. We have a sinful nature because of sin has entered the world. But God knows what is best for us. And not only that, although he is a righteous and holy God who despises sinfulness, he doesn't despise the sinner. And when Paul was writing that letter to the Romans, he was at great pains, not simply to show people what their problem is, namely that they have sinned and fallen short of God's glory, but he also wanted to show them why Jesus came into the world, and that was to save and to rescue sinners. People like you and me, because we've all sinned and fallen short, and Jesus Christ came into this world to suffer and to die for us. He took our punishment that should rightly be ours. He came into this world because God so loves us that he gave his only Son, so that if we believe, if we trust in him, if we put our faith in him, we will not perish but have everlasting life. And that's a life that goes on forever. In a sense, brings us outside of time as well. It's bang up to date, isn't it? Nothing old-fashioned about that at all. And God's ways are the best ways. Yes, we've got time for this. There's a book in the Old Testament called Ecclesiastes. It's one of my favorites in the Old Testament because it seems to have so much in it. It's basically a testimony written by a very rich and powerful man that's described as the king. We believe it's King Solomon. And if you know anything about the history of Israel, you know that King Solomon really had quite a lot of stuff. He's probably the richest king that Israel has ever had. And this book called Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament, it's about halfway through the Bibles. If you're looking for it, I have to get this the right way around, otherwise you'll spend the rest of the day looking for it. If you find the book of Psalms, which is quite easy because it's a long one, and then Proverbs follows it, Ecclesiastes follows Proverbs. So that's where it is. It's worth a read. It's a testimony of this man who wanted to set out and find out what there was about life. And he had the power. He had the wealth and he had the ability just to get whatever he wanted so he could try it all out. You know, some of us might say, well, if only. Well, Solomon didn't need to say that because he had whatever he wanted. And so he built wonderful palaces. He bought lots and lots of land. He became incredibly rich. He discovered that pleasures are meaningless. In fact, it's the early chapters are really quite depressing because every time he tries something, he said, for instance, chapter 2 and verse 11, yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, and he'd achieved a lot, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Nothing was to be gained under the sun. We read that, we know that he had vast numbers of wives and concubines, I forget the number now, but it does make you think he can't have had much of an intellectual relationship with any of them because he'd been rushing from one to the other. I've no idea how he could even conceive it. But the whole of this book, he goes through looking at life. Look, there's a lot of pithy wisdom in it. And yet, at the end of the day, he said, no matter what you do in this world, you can't take it with you. Puts it a little bit more elegantly than that. Doesn't matter what you achieve, you'll be forgotten. No matter how famous you are, nobody will care when you're gone. There's one or two bits of an indication that he realizes that there is more to life than he's seeing. He talks about that God has set in the hearts, set in human hearts, a sense of eternity, a sense of knowing that there is more than just these few short years in which we live. His conclusion at the end of the book is this: having looked at life and considered old age as well, he said, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. And I say this to you who count yourselves as youth. You know, anyone under about 65, okay? But while you're young, that joke gets older as I go on, you know. Those of you who are younger, don't think that you can leave it till later because you don't know what's going to happen in your life. Remember him now. But for those of us who are still here and no longer describes ourselves as youths, as young people, then it still applies to us. Remember your Creator before the days of trouble come and the years approach when you say, I find no pleasure in them. It's true that as people get older and as life becomes harder, as health fails and their abilities no longer keep pace with their desires, that there can be a sense of bitterness that grows in. And that bitterness comes between us and a search for God. He says, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Seek him while you may be found. God has a way for us to live. The Bible tells us what it is. It isn't the way of this world. The way of this world will find all sorts of ways of criticizing it. Oh, it's old-fashioned. Oh, it's not enlightened. Oh, it's just inconvenient. Or you're just peculiar. But God's ways are the right ways. God's kingdom is not built on us amassing great wealth of following greed and the like. It's not about how we progress in our careers or how we become upwardly mobile socially. It's not about just indulging every whim and fancy that we have. It's about being taken up in love with God, of knowing that our Creator who made us is quite able to meet all our needs. It's us putting our faith and our trust in him and finding peace and contentment in his presence and a unity with other people who are of like mind, which is something the world cannot offer. Oh, I know you can find sort of friendship and companionship in the world, but very often it's linked to a shared interest in something. But you look around the room here, we have all sorts of different interests amongst us. We are a diverse and a mixed people. And it could be even more mixed if we lived somewhere else other than fairly sort of conventional North Shropshire. But what unites us is a love for God. And God's love for us brings us together and gives us a fellowship together which the world cannot know and cannot experience. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him shall not perish but have everlasting life. We do not need to update that message. We do not need to change it. We do not need to come up with wonderful ideas to reach out to mythical modern man. The message we have speaks to their need and their issues, their problems. Because many of the things that modern man chases after, some of the things I mentioned earlier on, they find that actually when they indulge in them, it just leads to sadness and heartache and depression and suicide, and broken relationships, driving them into despair. And why? Because they're not living as God designed them to live. It can go on for so long, but in the end there comes a reckoning. Remember your Creator while there's still time, what Ecclesiastes would say to us. And remember that he doesn't change, so we don't need to change the message either. We might need to present it in language which people know and understand. Yeah, it'd be pointless me standing up here preaching in New Testament Greek to you. It would be quite entertaining because I can't speak New Testament Greek anyway. But, you know, we're Christians in the 21st century. Let's act as if we're in the 21st century. That's all we need to do. It's the same message, unchangeable, because God himself is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Let's pray, shall we? Father God, we thank you that you are unchanging. Thank you that you have revealed yourself to us and described yourself to us, and that we can know you as you are. And thank you, because of your unchanging nature, you can be trusted. There's no whims or fancies where you're concerned. And Lord, we know that when you've spoken, you mean it, and we can trust your word. Lord, that is such a relief in this world where nobody seems to want to trust anything, and where truths that are held up to be clear and plain are changed year by year. But Lord, thank you that your truth is truth, therefore doesn't change. Lord, help us to have confidence in it, even though the world might think we are strange. Help us to have confidence in you, that we might enjoy sweet fellowship with you throughout all the days of our lives, and onwards into that new heaven and new earth that's kept for us who believe. Lord, help us to trust you. For your name's sake, amen.